This is where we hold them! This is where we fight!
Now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.
Rob, what's good, homie?
Mike, what better way to match a worst of the week rosin bag when you're bowling than your very own worst of the week shirt to match your rosin bag? Now, let me ask you, in your days of your bowling career, how long you've been bowling, whatever it is, like 35 years plus probably, right? Have you ever had a shirt match your rosin bag?
I don't know. It had to have happened at some point.
Nobody has ever matched their shirt with their rosin bag.
Oh, you mean like the actual design?
Yes.
Okay. No, probably not.
Yes. Probably not. So, be the very first bowler to get a shirt, a Sweep the Rack Worst of the Week shirt with your very own Sweep the Rack Worst of the Week rosin bag. And now you're all good, man. You're ready to roll those 300s, average your 235 and 240, and impress the Patch Pirates in your league on Tuesday night.
No doubt.
Anyway, that's my shameless plug for the night. For our apparel. Bone with the Feff, what's up? Nico in the chat, what's up, guys? Tim got some skid hook rolls, asking if this is where he gets in the brackets.
The suggestion.
Other colors, working on it. Tim's
bigger sizes. Bigger sizes.
I'll try. So yeah, man. All right, Mike. I got the worst of the week shirt. You got your orange, man. We're matching, and we didn't even like plan it. So.
People want the link, Rob.
Oh, the link? The link.
Maybe while I'm talking about my hack job of a league experience, you can throw the link up.
Dude, I will. I will absolutely throw it up.
All right, shall I begin with what the people really want to hear?
People want to hear about your league, I guess. You know, what's happening?
All right, Mike, let's go. Jimmy, my guy. So I have two league reports this week because as I do usually once a summer, I get asked to sub in a house league, in Ocean County, about 50 minutes from my house. But because the person that asked me to sub is a good bowling friend of mine who I've bowled with for a long time at this point. And because his teammate is one of my young bulls that I see around the bowling community, I told him, no problem, I'll show up and bowl. So went and bowled on a house shot Tuesday night. And, man, they're easy, man. It's crazy. It's crazy. It really is. It's crazy. So, I mean, I left less than – I shot 690. It's like 696 or 697. I left less than nine twice. Once was in the first frame, and it was shadow bowl for practice. And I went 2-8 in the first frame. Right. So shadow bowl for practice. I go 2-8 in the first frame. I only had one other shot that I got less than nine. For the whole night, right? And it was I just found it kind of goofy. That's all. I found it kind of goofy. So 690 something, you know, didn't feel like I threw it all that great. I threw a red black widow the first game, and then
it's a pretty good ball though. I heard I have a drill.
It is a good ball. Good. See, yeah, it is. It's a very good house shot ball. From what I've seen, that's the second time I use it on a house shot, and yeah, definitely a good house shot ball. And then in the fill ball of the 10th, the first game, I think I shot like 238 or something the first game. I decided to break out the Venom Shock because that's like the house shot world beater, I feel like.
I pulled a world beater in any shot.
I know. So I broke that out. And yeah, I had a good look with that. You know, I could have thrown whatever I wanted, really, I felt like, just depending on what I wanted to do. But I broke that out, and I went...
The only time I struggled with that Venom Shock was like when they transition. That's the only time I really struggle with that Venom Shock. It just seems either it would go a little bit too long for me or it would be a little bit too early for me. I could never get the back end right when they transition. But once you're at the tail end of the transition, and then you could start moving left off of that transition, I feel like the Venom Shock really then kind of comes into its own.
Yeah. Oh, Jeff commenting that they're so easy. I didn't hit 700. I also missed 2 10 pins. So, I'm not going to lie. I had a friend stop by, friend from college stop by.
Here we go. The local excuses. Area.
No, and I had a couple beers. We had a couple beers.
So your swing should have been really free, man. You should have been freewheeled.
Yeah, it's usually the opposite with me. If I have a couple beers while I'm bowling, I'm probably going to get worse as the night goes on, not better.
No, I used to bowl college at this place. They were $2, 22 ounces. Yo, the first game, I was like, oh, I was feeling great. By the third game, I was like barely breaking 130, man. I couldn't even like see anymore.
I'm the same way. And then listen, these days, let me tell you, it doesn't take much. It doesn't – a few 9% craft beers. And yeah, I'm like, I'm feeling it a little bit. So, missed 2 10 pins. So that was – that would have been 700 plus, almost 730, 720, Jeff. So, you know, I'll take that. yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was fun. It's fun to strike. I understand why people enjoy bowling on the house shots. But
let me again, hold as I've this always said, up.
I just don't think that it needs to be recognized in terms of, you know, outstanding accomplishments. But go ahead.
So, Jimmy. He writes, I need the frustration, rage, and depression shirts. Jimmy, I had this shirt lined up, ready to get put on the store. I sent it to Mike, and Mike says, oh, I got to fix it. You think he fixed it? 3 months later, I'm still waiting on a shirt.
You're right. It is my fault. Because for that shirt, we need the whole passage. And Rob didn't have the whole passage. And I only want the shirt if it has the whole passage on it. With certain words highlighted. You just reminded me of that it slipped my mind. Everybody has my word. I will get that done within the next 7 days for Rob. Okay, I will get that done.
I'm not going to hold my breath on it, people. All right, Mike, go ahead. So
690-something, good time, fun time. Shout to my boy Ian for coming out and hanging out. And, you know, like I said, I understand. I understand the fun of bowling on a house shot, but... I'm not so sure that it requires the acknowledgement level that we currently give it. So my regular league review, I said to the guys that I subbed with, I told them, I said, you know, I bowled on this house shot tonight. I had a couple beers. I'm leaving here and I'm like, I'm just throwing it anywhere. I mean, I'm not even looking at what I'm trying to hit. I'm just strap and throw and that's it. And I mean, I was crushing them for a minute, right? Last game, I didn't bowl too good. I think I missed both 10 pins in the last game and shot 210, right? Yeah, so my last game wasn't that great. Lose. So last night, I told them before I left, I said, tomorrow night, I feel like it's going to be my worst night of my sport league for the entire summer because I'm going to go in kind of with some memory of just banging on it and throwing it anywhere. And yeah, just not. I didn't have a good feeling going in. So last night, bowling on the same pattern that we bowled on the week before, the Marshall, I think it was Marshall Holman pattern, I went, oh, Jesus, I can't even believe I bowled this bad. I went 185, 137, 171, 190. And the 190, I threw, I think, 6 out of the last 7 or 5 out of the last 6 because – I started that game spare, split, split, split.
I mean, you're 130. You're 137. I mean, you still beat Chris Barnes tonight by like 20-something pins in the PBA 50 step ladder.
You know, I say it all the time. I say it all. I saw that. I saw that. And I say it all the time.
That's one of
the reasons I love watching bowling because when I see a professional of that caliber, like Dr. Barnes,
bowling 116
in a stepladder situation, I think to myself, well, it's no surprise that a hack like me bowls 137. I shouldn't be surprised by that. So
I know. And it's so easy to get on Barnes about it. But, man, in order to get there, I mean, how good did he have to bowl to get to that point? You know what I mean? But all people see is the 116. Kind of like when Daugherty bowled the 100. You know what I mean? People will never forget that till he dies. And Rob Stone will be the first to bring it up all the time. But people got to realize how good he had a bowl to actually get on TV. You know what I mean? So easy just to remember the funerals. Nobody remembers the weddings.
Yeah, Tim, we didn't see it. We
He's went lucky.
We checked the standings. I know the stream wasn't working.
Word on the street is when Barnes was in the middle of that game, he went over to the plug, the power outlet, and he did a little, oops, you know, and then people, you know, no one saw it. So that's what I heard happened, but, you know, I can't confirm or deny it.
So last week on this pattern, your thing to me from the jump on the first pair I bowled on.
Barnes for sure is going to be messaging me, no doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Was not in play. Your thing was not in play last week on this.
Well, what did people do? What did people do? People had no, oh my God, urethane, I can't use it. I actually have to throw a performance ball in the first game. What were people doing? Losing their minds, probably.
I didn't really pay much attention to what other people were doing last week. Because I switched to an IQ Tour pin down, and that gave me a really good look. I was playing out to start, and that looked good if I could execute it. And then it transitioned where they carried down a little bit, and I had to make a big jump left, probably about 15, 17 boards left going into the third game. And, yeah, I had that look that I personally really like where I got a little bit of hold in the middle of the lane. I got a little bit of hook to the right. I could even miss a little further right and probably get a light carry if I'm lucky. Okay? Had that, all right? And I bowled pretty good. This week, it was clear that urethane was the play to start. There's no question that urethane was the play to start. But then they transitioned very quickly, and they carried down very quickly because everyone was using urethane. And I couldn't slow down. I could not slow down enough. So I got trapped between the urethane and the reactive in like the end of the first game, beginning of the second game. Second game started out four splits in a row, trying to move left. That actually ended up being the right move, but I didn't move far enough left. Then I switch pairs, and the gutter's in play on the other pair still. So the move on the other pair was not to move left, it was to move right. I got stuck in the third game playing in on the pair where I should have been playing out. Eventually I moved about 10 right, 12 right from where I was. And like I said, I threw the last 5 out of 6 or 6 out of 7, something like that. So yeah, I bowled like a hack. I missed several easy makeable spares and did not execute and bowled very poorly. I kind of pissed away my chances at a high finish in that league. I think I only got 2 points for the entire night out of a possible 25. So yeah, just disastrous. Yeah, really bad time for a bad week. But yeah, we still got 3 weeks left and we're bowling on some challenging stuff going forward. So we'll see what happens. I just gotta get my shot making back at a better level.
I gotta pull B and Lang's comment because if anybody remembers a few months back, I did my worst of the week on the bowling catfish, going around catfishing bowlers as well as pros that I found out that pros were actually sending this catfish money. I'm not gonna exactly say who it was, but anyway, long story short.
Well, it's got to be one of the guys with a big YouTube channel because the rest of the guys don't have that kind of money.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I'm just all I'm saying is like that would, you know, it could probably wreck houses with that information. Anyway, I guess her profile's back and she's back at it again. Not really. But Ian Lang is on the case, people. Don't worry. We're on the bottom of it. We got it. So, all right, Mike. I got a guest on tonight. And
we do have a guest.
We have a guest. So I was recently obviously on social media, and I saw that there was an action match that got set up. Robert Smith called out anybody in our area, in the Phoenix area, for a 5-game, $1,000 per game action match. And I'm like sitting there going, like, who in their right mind would bowl Robert Smith for $1,000 a game, right? Big shot Bob, Maximum Bob, previous guest, friend of the show, Robert Smith. And I started to look at the flyer, and I think it was really early in the morning when I woke up, and I'm like, wait a sec. I'm like, oh man, this is Carl. This is Carl's doing. I know it has to be Carl. So Carl Ong, I'm going to bring him on now, is the mastermind behind the Agent Ong Open, which is going on in October. Carl, I think he's on mute. Carl, you're on mute, by the way. If you could unmute yourself.
There you go.
Yo, what's going on, Carl?
What's going on, guys? How you guys doing?
Carl, welcome to Sweep the Rack, bro.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Yeah, so Carl, I know, is the master behind this action match, but I wanted to bring him on to talk about his tournament that he's running, because it's the first annual Agent Ong Open that's going to be held, and we'll let him obviously talk about the dates and the tournament itself. But we kind of want to introduce you, talk a little bit about your background in bowling, just, you know, how you started bowling and, like, what brought you to the game.
Man, I started as a kid. My dad was a lot older when he had me. I was born when he was 59 years old. So I couldn't do a lot with my dad. You know, can't play football, can't play catch. So he would take me to the bowling center, and I kind of fell in love with the sport. Had a little success as an amateur, went out on tour. That's how I met Robert and Tony Reyes, and I roomed with those guys on the regionals. And I learned the hard way that they're just that much better than me. Still love the sport. I still, you know, stay around it. Made a lot of lifelong friends when I was out there and met guys like yourself, Rob, and never looked back. So appreciate the sport. Love the sport. And that's kind of how we are here today.
What area are you from?
Born and raised in Tempe, Arizona native.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Did you bowl in college?
Actually, I coached ASU for 1 year, right before Jordan took over. So the guys got together and they were without a coach for a year. And that season I had Tyson Brannigan, Jason Cragen.
Eddie Curtley, was he on that team?
What's that? Matt Burley was on my team. Yeah.
Burley, Curtley. What about Eddie Curtley, the star of tomorrow?
Mike Bronsart? Mike Bronsart?
No, he was before. He was okay. With the previous coach ahead of time before. Like I said, I don't really know what happened. The guys got together and asked me if I wanted to coach for the year, and we did, and we actually made it to sectionals and the nationals. So,
wait a second. I got to bring this comment by Theo, who's pumped to partner with you, Carl. I didn't know Theo was partnering with you in this tournament. So you know what that means. You know they're going to be hard. There ain't no way in hell Theo is putting out any kind of house shot.
So with that being said, I'm actually controlling the format, and I'm also creating the lane pattern. So I'm actually working with Kegel and a couple of guys from Bolero that are here at the house locally. So we have something coming up. We'll release it 7 to 10 days prior to the tournament. And until then, you know, that's kind of, we're working out the kinks on it. But I'm not in Theo's case where he likes to watch people suffer. I mean, he enjoys, like, you can see the grin on his face when these guys are minus for the cut. You know, he loves it. He has a sick, twisted mind in that aspect. I'm not there. I mean, I want a hard pattern, but a fair pattern. My goal is to try to keep the pace around 210. That's perfect. My goal.
So now, I'm gonna go a little bit back here before we get into, like, the format and the tournament, whatever.
Sure.
Talk about what makes you want to decide to start a tournament like this. Like, all of a sudden, one day, would you get up and was like, you know what? I'm going to run a tournament in the Phoenix area. I'm going to pay 10 grand for first. I'm going to start running action matches. Like, talk me through
this. Where's the 10 grand coming from, too?
I'm guaranteeing the entire prize fund myself.
My man.
Props to you, bro.
So so the name of the tournament is called the Agent Ong Open. It's actually named after my real estate team. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. I'm getting some marketing, letting everyone know this is what I do for a living. I do real estate full time out here in the Phoenix area.
Okay.
Obviously, we're getting bowlers from all across the country, potentially some guys from even outside the U.S. that might be coming. So obviously I can't key in on all those people, but just building my brand. But at the same time, most of these bowlers that are coming out, I've been around bowling long enough. I might not be known as a bowler per se, but I've been around bowling for a very long time. How it came about, I've thought about this for years, but for the last year, I've been really trying to put this together, coming up with ideas that from bowling when I used to bowl Mega Bucks, and talking to a bunch of different guys and trying to piece it all together with things that I've bowled and other guys like Rob or Sean or, you know, Robert Smith, just trying to get a idea of from international flavors all the way to just the PBA stops and whatever, trying to come up with an idea where we come up with a different format, you know.
Yeah, just don't do a 17 man step ladder, all right?
No, definitely not doing that, although that was interesting to watch for sure.
I didn't think so.
I struggled. Bro, it's your first time on this show, so I'm going to let that slide. But I just got to say, I strongly disagree with that assessment.
Yeah, I'll disagree with you too.
I just said it was interesting. I didn't say it was a great idea. I just said it was very interesting to see.
Well, I'm just saying, don't use it. Don't use it.
I assure you that's not in the cards for us. I promise.
So do you still bowl?
Yeah, he subbed against me in league about 6 months ago.
So yes, randomly I'll show up and I'll shoe up and I'll throw a few games, but actively I'm not bowling league. I don't bowl tournaments. I did go to nationals this year. Nothing to report back on in regards to that. But yeah, just random stuff. You know, I'll get a hair and I'll just shoe up for a few games, but no, definitely that stuff's way behind me now. So, but I did want to talk about Theo really quick. I got to thank him. Theo's a huge instrumental part of this. I knew that I could not run a tournament without a solid tournament director. I can come up with the format. I can guarantee the prize fund. I can do all the marketing in the world. But I have to have complete bowling events and Theo to be the backbone and to make sure this format goes from A to B, you know, so I got to thank him and, you know, I couldn't have run this or even planned to run this without his experience and expertise on it.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to pull off events like this. You have to have, you know, good, knowledgeable, experienced people, to be able to, you know, make it work.
Sure. Absolutely.
So I'm judging by what you said before that no one is shut out of this event.
That is absolutely correct. But I did change the format to where some people guarantee X amount of divisions go to the finals. I didn't really want that, so there's one large division. But what I did was I segmented it based on averages or your status, whether you're a touring player, a national team member of any country, a titleist, whatever it has, you are getting zero. The only time that you're going to get outside of zero, if you fall into that red category that you're looking at, the 210 plus, is if you are a senior over the age of 60. That is where I talked to a few guys, and that was the number that we thought would be fair, that even though they might have won a title 20 years ago, because they're over the age of 60, we would then allow them to go back to either a 209 and under where they would get 7 or a 210 plus where they would get 5. So any super senior over the age of 60, whether you are past titleist or not, you will then get 5 or 7 based on your current 3-year average. So there's only 3 sticks value. You either going to get 0, you're going to get 5, or you're going to get 7. That's it. That's what I thought was the most equitable, where I'm not getting the 160 average guys that come in with 70, 80 sticks and just whack them. And I think I curbed a little bit about the potential sandbagging opportunities, because if you come in at 209 and you say you're 170, you're going to still only get 7 pins. So I'm trying to curb as much potential sandbagging as possible, but at the same time, just trying to keep the team or keep this game and season extremely equitable.
Damn, Carl's going to have like 30 entries. They're all going to be at 208 and a half average.
No, Pete Weber's going to show up, bro.
No, because he...
Pete Weber's going to show up. He's going to give Pete Weber five sticks, but, bro.
No, he can't because Pete Weber is still a PBA member, so that puts him in the red, right?
No, but he's 60. No. He's over 60.
So you're giving a 60, regardless of how good a 60-year-old is, you're giving them five
picks. That is absolutely correct. So if Pete was to show up, he would get, in theory, 5 sticks. That is correct.
Damn. Look, Chuck's in the chat. I think Chuck is going to – is Chuck 60? Is he coming out the ball?
No, Chuck's going to call Walter Ray and tell him, yo, let me back you in this tournament where you get 5 sticks a game. And Walter Ray's going to be like, someone's going to give me 5 sticks a game? Of course I'll go. I mean, but I got to be honest, though. If you take your top scratch players, across the board, I mean, that depending on who you are, I'll say, because there is an intimidation factor in bowling Pete Weber or Walter Ray or somebody like that. But if you take your top scratch players across the board, I don't think many of them would be scared to bowl Walter Ray or Pete Weber and give them 5 pins.
I'll put it to you this way, and nothing against Pete or Walter, but name me a single athlete over the age of 60 that you could say they're in their prime.
Norm Duke, maybe, but he's not 60. But the point is, I'm kidding.
Any athlete that you claim is in their prime would be in their what, 30s, maybe 40s max. There is a threshold of an age where you're probably not as good as you were 10, 15, 20 years ago. And I'm not saying that Pete or Walter, by you bringing those names up, that they can't win. Obviously, they can win. They're arguably the greatest of all time. Arguably. So with that being said, yes, they would get 5, but then they also have to bowl today's stars if they showed up, or whoever the top tier scratch bowlers, like you said. Is 5 pins or 7 going to deter a potential win either direction?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's a bad rule, to be honest with you. All right, so I have a few questions here that
I think it's funny that Pete Weber and Walter Ray can show up and get pins. I think it's enticing to guys like that, because it's like, oh wow, you're going to give me a couple extra 6 a game too. Okay,
yeah, maybe. I mean,
we had to come up with a number. I'll ask you guys, if you guys had the pencil, what would the age be if you were to make a senior division and eventually give somebody 6? What would that age be?
Probably 55.
So you think lower?
The
pool of more with more bowlers would get additional 5 to 7 sticks.
Yeah, so I don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
But I think 60 is right on though.
I actually the reason I would agree with Rob is because in a way you could argue, well, somebody who's 60 but has the resume of a Walter Ray or Pete Weber, like they should get those pins even if they're 55. Like the 5 years doesn't make all that great of a difference, but that's kind of why I would agree with Rob on that one.
Yeah. So there's a few. Yeah. I mean, I don't have any problem with that, to be honest with you, Carl. I think that's actually pretty good. You'll definitely get a lot of senior interest for sure.
I liked about the high roller that everything was scratch and it was broken down by divisions. Right. And then when you got to the end, and all those divisions were bowling against each other, it was still scratch, but it was one game, and anything can happen in one game.
So that was one of the things that got brought up when I was creating a tournament, was when I collectively thought of how many bowlers in each division I would get. What I didn't want to have happen was, let's say a women's division that might only allow me 10 to 15, 20 bowlers as an example. Guaranteeing one woman that only is 10% of my overall field to guarantee them into the finals doesn't make sense to me, because now I have 200 bowlers in an open division and I have someone that would average maybe plus 10 skates through, and a guy that shoots a 200 over outside looking in. Now created a scenario where the best of the best didn't make it. But now it's like I could put them all together from the start and they get 0, 5, or 7. I thought that was the most equitable to let the best bowlers over the course of the entire tournament earn their spot into my finals.
Yeah, not to mention in today's environment, you know, you run an event, you don't know, especially early in an event's history, you don't know, you know, what's the demographics of the field that's going to come out and bowl, right? So, like, if you get 5 seniors to show up, and now one of them's guaranteed in the finals, but like you said, you get 150 of the you know, whatever your 49 and under age group. You know, clearly, like, the people who have to go through that field have a much tougher challenge than the people who have to go through 5. So, yeah. I get it. I mean, you know, it's I feel like in the current environment, something has to be done either way, right? That's the bottom line. Like, whether you do
– is 1 in 5 cut.
Okay.
You know, I think that's another ratio that everyone has to remember. Instead of having divisions and having a 1 in 5 cut ratio, because then maybe only 2 or 3 people make it through – that block of division. Having a 1 in 5 overall cut, everyone has the same 20% opportunity just based on pins versus your entering average.
I think 1 in 5 is actually right. I think that's actually right on the right. You hit the nail on the head on with the 1 in 5. I think 1 in 3 is just, you have to pay out too many spots for that. And I think anything above 1 in 6 is a little bit discouraging to bowl. Like, I bowled tournaments at the High Roller, I think, like, mini eliminator, where he was like advancing 1 in 12, like, because that's, you know, hard. Which is ridiculous. Like, who wants to bowl tournament and you have to beat 1 in 12? I think 1 in 6 to 1 in 5 is actually really good ratio. I like that a lot about the tournament. So my interest looking at this flyer is the sponsors. When I'm looking at a tournament to bowl and I see your sponsors and I see all these different companies, I as a bowler, you want to bowl because you know there's going to be more money involved, right? When there's sponsors involved. So, you know, that's how hard was it to get sponsors? This is the first event. I'd imagine that couldn't have been easy. And it also looks like you're going to have a stream on Bowl Stream TV, which is really cool. Bowlers love that too. You know, to be able to get streamed in bowl tournament. So talk about, like, the sponsors and the streaming. I think that's a pretty cool aspect of your tournament too for a first one.
So these sponsors, honestly, a lot of them are people that I know. And I've, like I said, it's definitely given me an opportunity because I've lived here my whole life. I was able to, you know, reach out to a lot of these different sponsors because I've had a personal relationship with all of these companies. So when I went with them with this idea of holding this tournament, honestly, it wasn't really difficult to give them on board. The biggest thing I would tell you is I launched this in April. I had all these sponsors locked up before I launched the tournament. And what I told my sponsors were, instead of having you sign on after I sign this up, because now I'm on borrowed time. I've already set up the time. And now I'm out actively looking for sponsors after I release the tournament. I wanted to flip that idea. Is I'll get the sponsors first. So when I launch it, they ride this wave of marketing with me the entire time. So instead of giving a sponsor ROI opportunity only at the tournament site or leading up to it for like a month or two, I'm giving every sponsor a potential opportunity to be seen and to potentially gain business or just some traction with the bowlers that are following our page or learning about the tournament. They're front and center. Like, I promised them I would give every opportunity to give them as much potential for a return on investment for at least 6.5 months. And they have the option to be at the tournament site as well. With Bowlstream, I met Emil through Theo and running his Cactus Classic here. I love the way it shows, the way it comes across. It's just a really good produced option for bowling to watch. So I called Emil. We worked out a deal. I'm paying him a fair price, and he's going to fly out here, and he's going to stream for 4 straight days. And we talked about it. He's also going to stream the action match that we just randomly added last night. So you're going to get a lot of bowling. If you can't make it to the Phoenix area and you still want to follow our tournament, it's going to be live for 4 days.
All right, let's talk action because we love action around here.
So real quick before we get into the action, October 19th to the 22nd, it's going down at Bolero, Kyrene, and Chandler, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
So if anybody out there is listening and they're interested and they want to come bowl on the West Coast, East Coast, Midwest, International, you could email Carl at agentongopen.com. You can go to their website, www.agentongopen.com, get more information on the tournament. It looks like it's almost, you know, you're kind of treading the line between a scratch and a lower handicap type tournament. So
it's a hybrid. It's definitely a hybrid for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk
There's
about
even
the
a host now. Hotel. I got to be honest. I'm impressed by that.
Staybridge.
See that, Rob? Host Hotel. Yeah, I did.
Staybridge Suites, which is, hey, if anybody wants to pay me about $100 a night, they could stay in my house in Scottsdale.
Even you know. Me, I got to pay $100 a night.
Nah, man, we'll talk something off air about when okay. You know about
your payment. If you guys come, we'll figure something out.
To be clear, to be clear, I ain't paying shit.
Okay. Anyway, so let's talk about this Robert Smith batch because this is to me was you know pretty interesting. You don't see action a lot anymore, especially for this much for the amount of money. So what, Robert?
I would just want to put a suggestion out there real quick.
Please,
doesn't have to be this year, you know. But if you run it again next year, things go well this year, I would suggest hitting up one friend of the show and action coordinator extraordinaire, Dougie. I'd hit up Dougie. And I would try and get him out there, and I'd try and get him to do some of the action promotion because whenever he's involved with an event, there's just action all over the place. People just come out of the woodwork just to bowl action at an event that Dougie shows up at and runs one of his action nights.
So I will tell you that after 24 hours of this match being announced, I might move some things around next year and open it up to like 4 hours of go get it action.
Yeah.
And just open up the center and we'll host it and we'll broadcast it and we'll just open the center. Which I just have to figure logistically how to do it. As you can see on the flyer, we're fully packed with squads. There was no time to do clinics that people were asking about as well as what came up yesterday, this action match. So I'm learning as I go. I'm going to make concessions as I need them because I want to grow this tournament. If this tournament pops off and is a success, I assure you, that's why I called it an inaugural event because I have every intention of running this annually.
God, I wish I wasn't such a hack. I'd come out and stay at Rob's house for free and bowl.
Dude, and you know what? People are asking if I'm bowling. If anybody knows my personal what's going on with me bowling right now, I am taking time off to revamp my bowling game.
Rob is in the lab heavy. I can't say nothing. I'm not allowed to say anything, but Rob is in the lab heavy.
I'm coming back, but it's going to be coming back with a mission. I probably will not
back,
be bowling.
He's going to be on that. You weren't with me shooting in the gym, son. You weren't with me shooting in the gym.
I will be bowling though next year, the second annual. I will be 100% bowling.
I think you need to debut what you're doing at my tournament.
Oh,
there's no chance.
Oh. On bowl
if he does, if he does,
the world can watch you. You know, make your debut.
If you can convince him to do that, make sure it's live streamed the whole block, every game.
That would be I might as well just take the $275 at first entry and just literally like burn it.
Don't do that. We want the entry.
Oh, geez. All right. So how did this match come about?
I've known Robert for, forever. And there was an action match put on by Alley Cats, which is another tournament club out here in Phoenix. That happened a couple of weeks ago, and it sparked a lot of interest. Matt Zwieg had bowled someone. I don't remember the gentleman's name. I don't know him. But it got a lot of buzz around it. A lot of people showed up, and Reggie had broadcasted it live on Facebook. And I was like, man, I haven't seen this in a while. I haven't seen action matches since the Megabuck days, really, at a larger scale. So I was just talking with Rob one day, and I'm like, would you be up for it? And thought about it for a little bit, and he goes, yeah, let's do it. So I talked to Rob, and he gave me the green light to put out the open challenge on his behalf. And we launched it just a couple nights ago, and it went nuts. Like, it got shared a ton. People were wondering who was going to show up. Names were being dropped of who should bowl him.
Someone said I should bowl him. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, what are you kidding? For a thousand again. I almost called Carl and be like, hey, Carl, you want to back me? And you know what? He would have laughed at me. It would have been like, you got no chance.
That is one thing. I'm not backing any bid on anything on this tournament. One, yeah, integrity, 100%. And two, no chance. No, I don't want this match at all.
Where was all?
I know Greg forever too. I, as their friend, I want them to split the games. On a personal note,
I don't know. I want to see them beat each other up.
I don't know. We'll see.
And where was all this posted at? If people want to go check it out,
it was on Facebook. It was on our Facebook page at Agent Open. Okay. On Facebook, and then it kind of just went nuts. And then I got messages from random people. How do I get in? Is this for real? I'm like, and then Rob shared it himself, and he's the one that says, hey, who wants this has been? And that's what he said. Who wants a little piece of this has been? And people started chirping all day. And then by the end of the night, Greg's shoot up. He stood up and said, hey, I want it.
That's going to be a good match.
Greg said he wanted to smoke, apparently, so let's go.
It's going to be a good match.
No, Charles, listen, I think that, number one, I think that's a good format to entice action. You know, you have somebody put out an open challenge. You know, hey, I'm willing to bowl for this against whoever on you know, with these specific things in line, whatever it may be, right? You know, format wise or lane condition wise, whatever, right? But you have somebody put out an open challenge. And yeah, you see if they get any takers, you know, and if they get any takers, then you got yourself a matchup. The second thing I wanted to say, Rob, real quick, is that in the past, when I've seen this done in other instances, even when it's a really high-level bowler, like a Kyle Troop or an AJ, I've seen Kyle Troop bowl action around me. I've seen AJ Johnson bowl action around me. Buttriff bowled action around here. So, like, and this is just recently. I mean, you want to go back historically. Yeah, there's tons and tons of examples. But, you know, just – It's interesting to me that a lot of times when these bigger name bowlers put an open challenge out like that, they do get takers. They get takers. It's surprising.
And I would imagine, Carl, that if you're going to watch live personally Thursday night, there I would imagine will be some side betting. I mean, that's probably going to be that's like a given, right, when you have a big action match going on.
I would say – sure, absolutely. because I'm going to be there, and if no one is initiating it, I will.
Man, I wish you were doing this on Friday night, though.
I didn't read through the whole list of sponsors there. Is there any chance that one of them was an online casino and we're going to be able to get
you have a connection and you have a number, send it my way, and I'll make the call.
I'll send you the Twitter. You know, once in a while we talk with Bet Rivers, you know, and they're legal out of Arizona and they bet bowling. So maybe I can make that connection with Bet Rivers with you, Carl.
Put it together. I got room. I'm still taking sponsors now.
I'll talk.
Get some odds for the people. But if we can't, Rob, I don't know, man. You might have to clear your schedule. We might need you in the building there, not only to give us the play-by-play, but actually – Carl, you should have Rob do commentary. You should have Rob do commentary for the action match, and then this way I can get some side bets in too. We'll kill two birds with one stone.
I mean, is Rob going to be too busy writing a book in the back that he can actually commentate at the same time?
He is busy. I hear you on that. I hear that a lot.
But I wish it was actually you were doing this on a Friday night, to be honest with you, because, man, some people got to get up at 4:30 a.m. to work on Friday. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to there tonight on Thursday night.
I was working my butt off to see how I could squeeze this in anywhere, because we have 8 squads. The only squads that were limited were Thursday, because I have a sweeper at 7. And then we're just going to roll right into this action match right after 3-game sweeper. So,
yeah. You know? So, Carl, this is an amazing event.
If you want some high quality rosin bags to give out, hit up our guy Jeff Lindemuth.
Lindy's bags
right there. He does these bags. Good shit.
How fast can you turn them?
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, he's pretty quick.
Yeah, okay.
Pretty quick. Yeah,
we'll definitely talk.
Yeah, no, all right, let me know. I can make that connection too.
One thing though. Rob, have you seen
this? I've seen this back there. I was going to ask about it.
Look at that too. Man,
that's the trophy.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is pretty much it.
Okay.
Yeah. So these side circles right here, they are removable. So I know you can't see it, but it says the date in the inaugural tournament. This will eventually be what's kept by the champion.
Okay.
This belt will then be swapped out with these new plates every year. But yes, this is in theory the belt that goes with the champion.
Nice. Okay.
This is awesome. Well, Carl, we're gonna let you go here. We gotta talk about some PWBA and PBA 50 action. Guys, visit agentonopen.com. Email Carl at agentonopen. Check out the tournament. From the 19th is when the sweeper is. The action match Thursday night. Tournament starts Friday, and then it's gonna go on all weekend. Maybe I'll pop in on Saturday to Chandler. Get with Emil. Maybe I could get into the booth for a little bit.
If you show up, we'll definitely get you on, I assure you.
All right, perfect. We'll so maybe I'll make a trip down there and just to see what's going on. And maybe I'll bring the one ball I have right now, and maybe I'll give it a shot. But probably not going to happen. But anyway, Carl, we appreciate your time, really. This has been an amazing tournament.
Carl, thanks for coming on. Good luck with the event, bro.
No, I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about it. So enjoy the rest of your evening, and hopefully I'll talk to you guys again shortly.
Yeah, no, all right,
Carl, we'll talk to you.
Take it easy. See you.
We need more people like him. In the bowling community, you know what I'm saying? You need more people like him, more Greg Tax.
Well, that's why I like them.
More Theos. Yeah. Give him his flowers too.
I know
we've always had good things to say about him. Yeah, you need more people like the people behind NEBA. You know, I know there's a whole group of people behind NEBA. You know, I wanna say Chris Forey's name just because I know he's been associated with it for a long, long time. You need more people like, why am I gonna butcher this guy's name?
I'm gonna go even a step further.
Chris Vial, who running, I think second year of like a high roller type action tournament over Thanksgiving up in Connecticut. You know, it's just a shame that the real competitive bowling community has been diminished so much that. I just don't think that there's the numbers or the interest to really have these tournaments thrive at the level that a Hoinky, a High Roller, a Red Hot Series, a World Match Games. What was the other one around us, Rob? The Vera Papas, was that it?
Yeah, that was tough.
Yeah,
so like, you need more. Theo and more Carl and more complete bowling events, Agent on Open, you need less ABT. Okay.
Yeah, you need more Dougie, you know. I agree, Robert. I mean, you know, but and again, like, man, it's a shame. It's a shame because
it is.
If we could have kept the ultra competitive bowling community as strong as it was, let's say in like 98, right? When compared to now, I would say it was really strong then, even though a lot of people then were saying it was the end of the world and things were falling apart, right? But if you still had that kind of strength in the competitive bowling community, then, yeah, like, it would be awesome. It would be awesome to see a lot of these events dot the calendar throughout the year, because at that time you didn't really have as many events, you know, that you could look forward to and really prep for and train for and make a big score at. You know, there were few events, but all of them took place at the same time in Vegas in the same week. So it was either like you bowled good that week or
you know what the problem was, though? And I mean, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but the problem was is you had people like Steve Sanders running the mini eliminator who essentially ran it into the ground, right? Because of the money they were taking out, the 1-12, the waivers they were making sign about the prize fund. I mean, it just kind of went downhill. You know, the Edelman family has always ran a good tournament with the high roller. I've always enjoyed bowling their tournaments, and when that tournament stopped and went under, and it, they didn't go under because they still run the military tournament, which is a very successful tournament from them. But when the regular high rollers stopped, it was almost the end of the mega buck, like scratch mega buck era, right? As soon as the high roller went down, you know, the Tat, he's done a very good job keeping up with those tournaments in the same time period, but the Tat has been more directed towards handicap than it actually has
right,
been.
It's not your elite, right? It's not like the elite competitive level.
No, I'm fine with that because I love the way he doesn't
oh,
let
so
the elite
I mean, I remember when the Tat first started out as like an ancillary event during the high roller week. And it was something again that you couldn't bowl if you won more than 10 grand, right? Yeah. In an event. And I liked that a lot. I thought that
it was a
cool
great idea.
You know,
the problem with the Tat is the Tat has started being realized that a lot of their main like focus and main entries now are the handicap divisions. So they started being more generous towards the handicap bowlers, I should say, and less towards the scratch events, right? And the hand, you know, it's just a lot of divisions now. And, you know, the one thing that Carl talked about was the fact that he doesn't let one division go right to the finals, right? That's the way it is, right? Where right. If you're in the division, you go right to the finals. Whole different, they're in a whole different, like, life of their tournament the way he is now. This is his first event. The Tat has been running, you know, years or decades of tournaments. He understands the entries, he understands all that. Anyway. You know, that being said, the Tat does do the Vegas Open, which is a scratch tournament. I believe it's strictly for the scratch bowler. He does that during a Labor Day. You know, so he's still trying to make more tournaments for the scratch bowler. You know, I love Jamie. I love his tournaments. I support them. I'll bowl whenever I get back on my feet with my bowling game. I'll bowl whenever I can. Twice a year because, you know, it's a great tournament. But that being said, all right, Mike, we want to get into a little bit of the PBA 50 or PWBA action. I know Nico's been all over the PWBA action. He's been commenting. Diana, I'm going to try to say a last name. I'll butcher it. Zavajalova. How'd I do?
I don't think you did that good.
No, she beat Pluhowski. Shannon doesn't have the best success in the finals, does she? Am I off saying that?
No, it's been a while since she won, I believe.
It's been a while. And this was her tournament to win. Mike, what did she average? Hold on, wait. Let me pull her average out here.
Well, Pluhowski led the whole thing.
So. Yeah, it was like she averaged like a ridiculous amount. It was like something crazy. 245, Mike. She averaged.
Yeah, I watched a little of the stepladder before we came on. You know,
yeah.
Quality players, man. Quality players.
Shannon Pluhowski, Jordan Richard, Jillian Martin, Diana Zavajalova were in the top four. You want to talk about top four and Jillian Martin, Mike, making a stepladder. And I know she, you know, she's been bowling her college. I you know, she's not a full time on tour, right?
But I think there was a fifth player too. I think it was Kerry Smith.
Kerry Smith, and then Brianna just missed it. Hope Gramley. You know, it's a lot of the usual. Jordan Richard is pretty much almost, I think, a guarantee at this point. She's going to make the top five in every PWB event. But yeah, I mean, Diana, what she climb the ladder at this point, I would imagine, right? If she was a fourth seed. So you get comfortable, you get really just relaxed in the finals, and then you just kind of go through it. And yeah.
Yeah, I watched the last game I watched was her against Jillian Martin. And, you know, I felt like Jillian Martin kind of gave it away a little bit. She had
a little nervous. Did she get some nerves?
I don't know if it was nerves. It just didn't seem like she threw her best shots at the best times. You know, she had a chance to close her out in the 10th and split. You know, it just wasn't a real good shot. Also, a split in the middle of the game too.
Yeah. So anyway, congrats to Diana. Well deserved. She's one of the top players on tour. Yeah, and we'll continue. There's a lot of PWB action next week or two. Kevin Hebert, I hope Rob watched the PBA 50 match play. I watched a little bit of it. Pete was in full crazy mode in a good way. Fire up, running him out, fist pumping, pissed off. He was throwing it fantastic. It was awesome. He's probably feeling better. You know, and one of my questions during this PBA 50 year, Mike, was the fact that we didn't see Pete Weber in the finals a lot this year. And then I got a lot of people that were, you know, responding and being like, well, he hasn't been feeling well physically. He's been dealing with a bad back. And I'd imagine that was the case, right? So he's probably feeling better. And a PBA 50 tour with Pete Weber winning is a great tour for everybody. Everybody wants that and needs that, to be honest with you, for the PBA 50. I would guarantee you, and I don't know the numbers, you'd have to get with Bowl TV. I would guarantee you the numbers for the people watching the streaming stepladder when it's actually working would have been a lot higher than normal numbers when Pete Weber is in the finals.
True.
But the PBA, so none of the stepladder, Mike, were you able to see any of that?
No, I don't think so, no.
Oh, man, could you imagine the one time Pete Weber makes the stepladder for the PBA 50 and the stream goes out? That's got to just be like bad luck at that point for the fans as well as the Bowl TV people.
All right, Rob, let's give the people what they want.
All right, you got it. Worst of the week. Get your shirts at the Etsy store. It's not on there yet, so don't go on yet, but I'll get it up there.
Oh, my goodness. I have so much worst of the week material this week. It's tough to choose. I got a guy from the Bowling Science Forum who posted three different house shots that his house might use, and I think they vote on it. So he wanted to know, based on a description of his game, which one would be the easiest for him? Which one would be the easiest for him? Right. So that was one. I got another guy on the Bowling Science Forum who found a bowling bag for really cheap. And it looks like one of those really old Columbia bags, like the two ball Columbia bags that had the little click up, little suitcase handle thing. Okay. But yep. The suitcase handle thing is off. It's broken. And he's asking for ideas of what to use to replace it. I mean, the level of cheapness here is just too much. But those aren't the ones that I'm giving worst of the week, though. The one I'm giving worst of the week is from Fat Boy Waffles. Bowling
Wait,
ball
that's group. His name?
Oh, no. Wait, no, this is the it's group.
A group? Oh,
Fat
I thought that was
Boy
his name.
Waffles Bowling Ball Group. Now, if you're not familiar, The term waffle is used as a replacement for raffle on social media. Because really? If you put raffle, Facebook, et cetera, they'll like shut you down because they don't want you raffling stuff off, right? So waffle.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, waffle has kind of become synonymous with raffle. So this is Fat Boy Waffles Bowling Ball Group. And this was posted by Eric John. So I'm assuming that this is a group where they regularly do bowling ball raffles. Okay.
Waffles.
Right. Here's the post. Well, first of all, there's a picture. There's a picture of a car. Okay. And here's the post. If we waffled off a car, would you be interested? what would you be willing to pay for a spot? We have an 05 BMW 330i in a rare sport package spec. More details if we get enough interest.
Is that a spam? It sounds like a spam message.
Let me just say, fat people over at Fat Boy Waffles, stick to waffle and the bowling balls. All right, let's not get out of hand. Let's not be waffling off cars on the internet. All right, just stick to the bowling balls. Okay.
Waffles. That's the first I've ever heard of that. Get some chicken and waffles, but instead you're gonna get chicken and raffles. All right. Well, my worst of the week is, it's pretty well known at this point that I'm not a very big Bolero Mesa fan, right? My old league stomping grounds,
tables,
the dirtiness, just the whole center is just, not a fan of. So I got this message sent to me about the Bolero Mesa, how they're still struggling over there, I should say. Bolero Mesa is trying very hard to be worse than Via Linda. Via Linda, by the way, is the one now really close to my house. So that really doesn't give me a lot of confidence. That's where actually I go to practice, which will be my closing, my final thoughts. Bolero Mesa is trying very hard to be worse than Via Linda. They may just achieve it. Eight lanes during Reggie's tournament this morning shut off all at once. That was what Carl was talking about, the Reggie, the Alley Cat tournaments that he runs. Okay. They got them turned back on after about 10 minutes, and a half hour later, they all shut off again. It's a train wreck out here. That's what these people are messaging me about Bolero Mesa. I mean, I just think this is the start of it, to be honest with you, with the Bolero centers. I don't see any really money going back into the centers. I don't see them fixing lanes. I don't see them putting new lane surfaces in, new pin setters in. I think if they do put new pin setters in, they're going to be string pins. I've been on record saying that. I think any new Bolero centers that they acquire, that they are going to put any money into it, it's going to be string. I think people are going to have to deal with that. But yeah, I mean, as for like upgrading the facilities, I don't think it's going to be an upgrade that's going to be towards the competitive bowling world. I think it's going to be more towards the what is the word I'm looking for? More like the those like clubbish bowling type like upgrades and new centers. You know what I mean? Where there's going to be couches and there's going to be like all kinds of like upgrade first class type. Clubby type looking bowling centers. But anyway, yeah, shouts to Bolero Mesa, making the bowlers happy out there one day at a time.
Yeah, I had a convo on Twitter earlier this week where somebody was telling me that one Bolero center in New Jersey already switched over to string pins, and the plan is for several more to do the same. You know, it's funny, I was talking to a regional, and I know you're probably going to disagree with me on this, but I'm gonna put it out there anyway. Like, I was talking to a regional bowler last night at League, and, they were just saying that there was a regional in the East region this weekend where instead of taking 16 to match play, they took 12. And they did it because
of entries?
No, it was because of time constraints from the bowling center. Like, I guess they needed them wrapped up by a certain time on Sunday, which would have been the finals or whatever. So, shout to Jake Rollins, too. He won his second regional title. I think Alex finished second, Rob. He's been bowling really good lately, too, out here.
So, they cut out four bowlers because they need the lanes for, like, parties or whatever.
So, I don't know. I'm not going to go that far. I didn't get any reasons as to why. Time constraints was the phrase used in the conversation that I had. And, in this conversation with this regional player, I brought up that story that we talked about a few months back about the birthday parties at the place that had the regional. You know, listen, I hate to say this, I really do, but I think this is the real truth of the matter. Like, as time goes on, and I feel like this is going to happen more quickly than a lot of us would like to believe. But as time goes on, the places where you can go and conduct a real high-level competitive bowling tournament are going to be less and less. And, like, honestly, I think that bowlers kind of need to get used to compromising with the owners, managers, et cetera, of these centers that are still left that can, you know, that are able to host a high-level competitive bowling tournament. Because, yeah, like, we're going to be running out of options soon enough. We're going to be running out of options soon enough. So, yeah. All right, Rob. All right, final thoughts.
Yeah, final thoughts. So I went to Bolero last week to practice. It was a like Sunday afternoon. So I think it was one of the days where it was like 120. I'm like, I'm going to go to the bowling center. I'm going to bowl a little bit, you know, just get the feel of it, you know, get my shoes on, you know, see how those feel. I went in there. The place was pretty empty. There was probably maybe like five lanes going out of like probably 40, five to like maybe seven all spread across the house. I bowled three games, and it took me probably about a half hour to bowl three games, maybe 35, 40 minutes. And my total, my bill for the three games was like $20 and like 60 something cents, something in that nature. It was around 20 to like the high end, and it was around there. Mike, I'm not cheap by any means. And I paid the 20 and I moved on and I practiced. But what in the world are we doing for someone on a Sunday afternoon when there's like six lanes out of 40 going that I'm paying six something dollars a game, you know, without tax, right? And I can go to B3 and bowl for an hour on a tough shot, you know, for $30 to $40 and get a real practice in instead of bowling on some leftover house, which was what I practiced.
Right.
On
well, yeah. I mean, afternoon. I think that's the point. Like, we have to support the B3s and not the Boleros.
That is 100%. And, you know, the only issue I ever had with B3 is the fact that they're not open on Sunday. That's my only issue that I have with B3. I love the facility from the top to the bottom there. But for me, a Sunday would have been amazing for them to be open because, like, that's the day that I'm off, right, from work, Saturday and Sunday. And sometimes you don't want to go on Saturday. You'd rather go on Sunday. But, yeah, like, to me, you know, it's ridiculous. It's stupid. In order for me to bowl sometime cheap at a Bolero near me, I have to go on, like, at 8 o'clock at night when they're running like $2 or $3 a game specials, like 8 o'clock, like to like 10 o'clock at night, right? And yeah, you know, convenient. That's hard. So that's my final thought. Is it just sucks? You know, it sucks for the guys who want to go bowl and have to pay $6.50 a game on a Sunday afternoon.
I have multiple final thoughts. Bolero, part of my cheesesteak, part of my ass crack. Okay. Are you kidding me? I'm gonna have to do a review of this, I think. As a cheesesteak aficionado, I might have to put up some content and do a review of this part of my cheesesteak at Bolero, this nonsense. Okay, that's one final thought. Second final thought is this. Is it good or is it bad that a teenager in a tournament with all people from all over, a lot of the pros bowling in it, etc. Is it good that a teenager won the tournament?
Yes.
Okay.
You know why I say that?
Why?
It's good in the fact that people, they see that, and then they think, well, if a 17-year-old could win that tournament, then maybe I could win it. Right. And I think it's more like,
well, do you remember? I mean, it's on a softer pattern. So
that's what I'm saying is Well, I'm
and no disrespect. I want to be clear. No disrespect to the to whoever this kid is. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, he had to be great. Adam. So, do you remember Robert Rocconi?
I think I read that he finished ninth at junior gold. So yeah, he's got. I mean, he's got to be decent,
game.
Right?
He's got game. There's no doubt. But, you see him throw the kid know, throw the man. Ball. Do you know who Robert Rocconi is? Do you know that name?
Yeah.
I call it the Robert Rocconi World Series of Poker effect.
Okay.
Robert Rocconi was a poker player from Brooklyn. Yep. Look him up. He was the first amateur.
He was pre-moneymaker.
Pre-moneymaker. He was, I believe, and I could be wrong here, I don't have great poker history, but I believe he was the first amateur to ever win the main event World Series of Poker. And it really started a little bit of the poker boom when Robert Rocconi won. And I think that, you know, that's not as at a highest level as what we were talking about. You know, I'd be like an amateur winning the U.S. Open. I think to me, you know, as an amateur won the World Series of Poker, I think that would be more comparable to this tournament. But, you know, hey, it might show their entries might go up next year because people might say, hey, a 17-year-old won the league championships. Then, you know, maybe I could win.
I don't know. I just tend to look at it like.
Would you rather have seen Anthony Simonson win? And I'm just using him because he's like the best in the world. Would you rather have seen him win the tournament? You think that would have been better for the, you know, the LBC?
Well, they weren't even competing in the same division. I'm just saying the kid put up the highest number. And I think the finals are at Bayside while the league's going on. So there's still more bowling to go. But
I'll be honest. We're seeing him. We're going to see him on TV.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I'll be honest, though. I don't think it's a good thing when, you know, an amateur or a younger kid or whoever really, you know, beats an established high-level pro. Yeah, I just don't think it's a good thing. I don't think it's a good look for
the sport.
So
what is your beef? Is the fact that the lanes were just too easy? Is that what your beef is?
I guess that's always my beef.
Are you saying
that
he won because the lanes were easy? I know. That's what I'm trying to get to.
No, don't go that far. I'm not saying that. I'm not trying to disparage the kid's accomplishment. Here's how I would say it. If the lanes were harder, I think there'd be greater chance of the elite professional players shooting the highest scores.
Don't you think that's probably the reason why they didn't make them harder?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the minute you allow those elite professional players into the event, you got to make them harder.
Why?
That's what I'm saying.
Why?
Because that's where their skill set is going to show and make a difference.
But those elite players are going to show up regardless because the PBA is practically making them go bowl that tournament.
Understood.
So they might as well like
that. I'm talking about the results. I'm talking about the results and how the results are viewed by the general public versus how the results are viewed by, you know, people that are hardcore into the game. Right?
Oh, so you're saying that this is more of just a perspective thing where, like, people are going to be like, oh, well, this kid beat the best in the world.
Right.
That's how you're looking at it.
Right. And they're either going to think, well, the best in the world aren't that great.
Right.
Or they're going to think, oh, this 17-year-old kid is an absolute phenom. Okay.
We're looking at it at two different perspectives. You're looking at it at that perspective. I'm looking at it like as a PBA wants to bring more entries in to the tournament next year.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Tim says, you know, we wouldn't have a Pete Weber or Norm Duke. They were both 18 when they started on the PBA. No, understood. But my counter to that, Tim, would be that in that instance, Norm and Pete were bowling on conditions that resembled what the guys on the PBA were bowling on, more so than bowling in an environment where it really wasn't that the same and thinking that it stacks up. So I don't know. It's just something that's been on my mind since that tournament finished. All right, Rob. Listen, we appreciate everybody joining us. Much love to everybody who comes into the chat and shares with us. Hope you enjoyed the show tonight. It was nice to have Carl on. Hear about his event action. I love action. Always love action. Action is the heart of bowling to me. It really is. It's where it's at. So it was cool to hear that. We'll keep up on that. Follow us on social media. He's at Brooklyn Rob 11. I'm at the 215th. I don't. Will we be on next week? I assume we'll be on next week, most likely. I'll be around. I don't know if you'll be around.
What's next? What's next weekend? I say yeah. I should be. We should be good. Yeah,
Brad and Kyle on Fox and Friends for National Bowling Day.
I hope that's just. I hope that's a better segment than the last time they had the pros on Fox and Friends. That was a disaster. Sure. But yeah, I'm sure either it's going to be worst of the week or it's going to be something we'll talk about if it's a good segment. But I foresee it being a worst of the week candidate without even watching it.
No doubt. You know? All right, Rob, have a good week, and we'll talk to everybody next week.
Later, guys.
You are now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.